know what I'm saying?
WJBR Internet Radio for the inquisitive mind and the sophisticated ear. Hey, how's everybody doing out there? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing well. I'm grateful for my so many blessings, and I'm also grateful for the opportunity to spend time with you this evening. As you may know, tonight we have a very special guest joining us, the Senior Bishop Zachary Jones, will be coming on a little bit later on in the show, and I'm really excited about that for a lot of different reasons, not just because he's a wonderful human being, but because I don't really know what would have happened had I not walked into Unity Fellowship Church, which was on 13th Street in Manhattan, in the LGBT Community Center, way back when. Had I not had that experience and then had the experience of worshiping and going to attending the Bible study in Brooklyn, which really helped me so much. So at that time, during those times, the bishop was a pastor, and he was a great pastor. He's still a pastor, I think, but we'll talk to him about that. In the meanwhile, we're going to listen to some gospel music. And I want to send prayers out to Teresa Connors and her friend and her family, I'm sorry, to Shai and her family, to Shatanya Capers and her friends and family, and to anyone who is ailing right now, anyone who needs healing right now. I want to let you know that God sees you and you'll be okay. Everything is going to be okay. Everything is as it's supposed to be. And with that, I'm going to play Even Me.
You are simply and say
A change has come over me. He changed my life, and now I'm free. Jermaine is coming at this time.
Oh, you can't change.
Yes, yes, yes. And I could testify to the changes that have occurred in my life and in my way of being, not who I am, but in my way of being. And sometimes we think about, well, I think about, how do I know that God is making these changes in my life? And, you know, it's pretty simple. It's the most simple thing, and that is that these are things that I could not do for myself, and no man could do for me. No one man can do for me. And if God continues to do what God has already done, then I'm going to be good. You know, it's plain and simple as that, you know. So with that, my new social networking friend, Kalisha, shout out to Kalisha if you're listening, has introduced me to some new music. And one of the people that she put me on to is Anita Wilson. And she has a song called Keep Doing What You're Doing. And I want to play that for y'all. So give this a listen. Let me know how you feel about it. I personally love it. So, yeah. This is Miss Anita Wilson.
I've been doing some thinking lately. And I know and believe that God still works miracles. Yet I'm so very, very grateful for what some call the simple thing. I just want to take a moment here. This is my prayer. Listen.
I acknowledge that you're in control. There's nothing too hard for you to handle. I believe you can do anything. Your word says so. Even come close to your dominion. Oh, 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 oh. I don't have to see you.
are everything. My love, my joy, my song, and my peace all the day long. Oh, everything is you. You're the air I breathe. You're the song that I sing. My Lord, you are everything. Come on, Karen.
You are everything. My love, my joy, my song, my peace. Oh, all the day long. And everything is you.
My joy, that's you.
Oh, everything that I ever needed, that's you.
Oh, it's you. My peace, it's you.
My joy, oh, that's you.
Oh, it's you. Everything is you, Lord.
Everything that I needed, that's you.
Our head.
Take it up, Pastor. Glory to God.
And everything.
glad about it, I'm so glad about it. Sometimes people think that I don't have nothing, but really I have everything.
Come on, say
I
that,
have
say
everything.
That, say that. Yes, Lord.
Hey, I grew up on the Parkside Projects, but even then I want to say I had everything, because I had Jesus. Anybody got Jesus? Anybody got Jesus?
Through my bad, you loved me through my good, and you loved me through my bad, Jesus. You didn't erase my future because of my past. I'm glad you loved me through my good and my bad,
through my good
and my bed. You love me through my good. You love me through my bed. Didn't erase my future.
Hallelujah.
Because of my past.
Thank you.
I'm glad you loved me through my good and my bad. So glad you love me.
You love me through my good.
Never took your love away.
You love me through my bad. Hey, you didn't erase my future.
Thank God you didn't write me off. I even did some things I know you despise, God.
You love me through my good.
And my bad, yeah.
You love me through my good. And my bad.
Sometimes we make you ashamed. Thank you for never giving us what we deserve, God. After falling again and again, every blessing and request that you granted, Lord, you could have withheld, but mercy intervened.
You love me through
the rebellion.
Favorite right here.
You keep on loving me.
Can somebody help me?
You keep on loving me. You keep on loving me. You keep right on loving me. Through the good and the bad, you never stop loving me. Through the lessons learned, you show me. We disobey you. We run away from you. Bring shame to your name. But your love remains. Who could love me like you do, Lord? What you are to me, no man could ever.
my good and my bad. You love me through my good and through my bad. Oh, didn't erase my future 'cause of my past. I'm glad you love me through my good and bad.
Lord, open up the door to my heart so the door, asking you, Lord, please open up the door
to my heart
so I can receive. I want to receive all of your blessings. I'm asking you, open up the door, yeah, and I receive you in all of your glory. And I receive you in all of your splendor, yeah. And I receive you in all of your glory, yeah. And I receive you in all of your splendor, yeah, Lord, open up the door
to my heart,
to my heart, so I can receive from you, my Lord. I want to receive all of your glory, Lord, and I receive you in all of your splendor. I receive you in all of your glory, and I receive you in all of your splendor.
I just had to play some of that. You know, I need to be open. I need to allow God in even further in. And, yeah, I just I don't know, maybe some of y'all were feeling that too. And I'm going to tell you that one of the ways that I first became, I guess, I came to a point where I understood that God wanted to hear what I had to say was during my time at the Unity Fellowship Church of Christ in New York. At that time, I was a young knucklehead. I can't even say it any other way. But the pastor at the time was Zachary Jones, who is now a senior bishop. And I started going to the church in, I don't remember what year it was. That whole time of my life is very foggy, I'll say that. But I remember going to Brooklyn to Classens Avenue for Bible study, and I would sit in the pews there, and it was just remarkable. And that church is still going to this day. And Senior Bishop is still pastoring. And
yes.
He let me just tell you, throughout all of my years of knowing of this man, even prior to him knowing my name, he was always very gracious, very loving, very humble. And I just always had the sense that if I ever really needed to talk to someone, if I ever really needed someone's support, I knew this man would listen. And just because someone wears the title of pastor doesn't mean that they know how to actually pastor and what that means. And, you know, so it's what, so much honor and humility that I'm even able to say that I introduce to you and I welcome to the show Senior Bishop Zachary Glenn Jones.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming on.
You're more than welcome.
What a journey you've had.
Yes, it has been a journey. How about that?
Yes,
it has been a journey, but life is like that. Life is so much a journey, and it's been exciting.
Yes. So I want to talk to you first about some things that people may not know about you.
All right.
Like, what was Zachary Glenn Jones like as a little boy? What kind of things were you into? See, you ain't know I was going to take it there. That's the last thing you thought I was going
to. This is Throwback Sunday. Okay, no problem.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I had a very interesting childhood. Certainly, God was always a part of my life, even as a very young child. I had a very early spiritual experience at the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it vividly as I was a young Sunday school boy in church, probably like many people of my generation. And but out of 7 kids that my mom had, I quickly knew that I was drawn to spiritual things at a very early age. I grew up in Los Angeles, where it was a fun place to grow up, where Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm and all those wonderful places were. And, I had a wonderful family. I come from a large family. There is, thank God, 7 of us. And I am on the lower end of the 7. And, we came up in a big family where if someone did something, we would all hide until our parents figured out who did it. And we would, we grew up just around a lot of laughter. I had a wonderful father and mother in the home, as well as a live-in grandmother. And so we were a small community unto ourselves. And then we shared our home, as probably most families with a lot of kids, with the rest of the block. And so kids, there was always someone coming or going or staying over or spending the night, cousins and friends. So I come from a community of people who were rich in African-American culture, and my parents are from the Deep South, and they took a lot of those traditions to the West Coast. But one thing I'm very glad that they did take, of course, was our spirituality, and cultivated our spiritual personality.
Yeah, yeah. So you were a Sunday school kid. By the time you were like in high school, were you still interested? Were you still interested in those spiritual things? Were you was this something that started early with the spiritual awakening at seven, and it just never left? Or did you
stray and
then come back to it?
Right. Well, you know, a lot of times we tend to grow and stray and then come back. And I was one of those that kind of held on to mine. Not that I didn't explore like other young teenagers do, but I always stayed connected to my spiritual roots. I had an unusual love for the things of God. I remember as a kid, my mother chasing me out of my bedroom and saying to me that, you know, you're always stuck in the bedroom with the door closed reading the Bible. And this was around age 10, 11, 12. You know, why aren't you outside with the rest of the guys playing? Go close the Bible, go outside and play. So she would shoo me out. For me to only make my way back in, and I had this insatiable appetite for scripture and trying to understand who this Jesus was, and so that appetite never left, and it continued to stay with me probably until the times that I was dealing with my sexuality. That was probably the darkest and the most remote times of my spiritual journey.
Yes. And I guess coming to terms with your sexuality, and sexuality period for any young person who is in the church, I would assume, whether you're straight, gay, bisexual, or whatever, sex and the church is a very sensitive kind of thing. Although, obviously, if you're homosexual or bisexual, it's going to be a bigger, scarier thing based on your belief set. How much support did you receive from the churches that you were going to, or your family?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because almost around the same time as I was dealing with, you know, kind of my, what I would call my spiritual born-again experiences, I also was dealing with coming to grips with the fact that probably not like Jim down the street or Tony or whomever, or any of the other little boys, that I tended to be somewhat sensitive and somewhat softer than the rest of the guys. My interests seemed to be very different. And as I grew into early adolescence, I began to also recognize that my attractions were taboo. In accordance with what I had come to know that boys should be attracted to, and taboo in terms of certainly what the church was teaching. As a result of that, I pretty much kept to myself and, you know, kind of hid that part of my life. There was shame and isolation. I loved reading as a child, and so I would spend a lot of time in the library reading about what it meant to be a homosexual and kind of designing my life. My oldest brother is gay, and he's about 10 years older than I am, and he certainly was a very positive role model for me. And so we're talking like around the 60s and early 70s. And as I begin to sort of deal with, oh, this is a part of me that the church says that God rejects, there was an element of that that I was able to accept and an element of that that I was not able to accept. It stayed a struggle in my life for almost, I would say, 15, 20 years, even though I, you know, probably like most children, I had boyfriends, girlfriends in junior high school, adolescence ages. I still had not resolved my sexuality until much later in my young adult life.
Wow. Wow. And so how did you resolve this?
Well, you know, through reading and kind of coming to terms, I was a member of the Baptist Church who, you know, taught us that homosexuality was an abomination. I was also, I can remember being in elementary school as far back as sixth grade. And because I had not developed my athletic abilities as many young boys had, and I had a sort of a comfortableness around females that was not an attraction comfortableness, but a comfortableness as friends. I was often bullied and teased as a young child, almost on a daily basis. And so I can recall running out of the classroom and just running out in tears onto the playground yard. And I was a likable child by adults, but not as likable among my peers, particularly the male peers. And I can remember my principal, Mrs. Wiley, at the time. I was a student of Butlong Elementary School, and she really became very concerned about my reaction to this taunting and bullying. And so she took me kind of under her wings and began to really talk to me about why my reaction and the pain that I was experiencing was as adverse as it was. She brought my parents in, and my parents, in a very loving way, you know, with the knowledge that they had, did everything they could to try and understand me. They would ask me questions like, well, is what they are saying true? Because they would use terms, very derogatory terms like sissy. I don't think the word faggot was around at that time, but certainly sissy was. And I can recall being very confused about that question because there was a part of me that wanted to say, well, yes, what they are saying is true. And there was a part of me that wanted to say, well, what they are saying is true, but it hurts when I hear them say it. Mm. So I was in that struggle trying to figure out, well, what part of me do I respond to this question? And the questions were very sincere, both from my parents as well as, you know, the staff at the school. And so I really didn't know how to answer. And my dad did everything he could to man me up, and my parents put me in Boy Scouts, and my father started spending more time with me, all which was appreciated because it did help to develop another side of me that I came to appreciate. But my sexuality, as much as I struggled, I then began to look to my spirituality, resolve it. And in trying to do so, I begin to spend more time with people that went to Holiness Church, my peers and family members. And I would spend a lot of time, particularly during the summer months, going to evening churches with people that were neighbors of mine, and they, you know, very much taught holiness or hell. And so I thought, well, that must be the way. And I tried to, stuff it out by overshadowing it with a kind of a very strong and strict holy dogma and taking on this image. And yet, in doing so, some kind of way, I would always be engaged in some level of attraction, even by church members, the place that I thought I could run to and run away from that part of myself. So, of course, when meeting other guys who were dealing with the same issue, it only increased the confusion. It wasn't until after I did everything that the church told me to do, I got married to a wonderful young lady at the time in the early 80s, and I remember just feeling very empty and very void and had to come to terms with saying, you know what? If God doesn't love me and if God does not accept me, then I might as well live my life. I might as well just go to hell living my life. And so this was the early 80s, and I went to my wife at that time and I said to her, listen, I'm struggling with this sexuality issue. I've shared with my pastors. I've talked to everybody I know to talk with. My pastors basically would tell me things like, well, the next time you have an urge to act out of your sexuality, give me a call. Well, that didn't help.
Yeah, no.
That just was just very uncomfortable, and I didn't even have the language at that time to say, well, okay, I'm now feeling like, yeah, you know, I want to act out or whatever the phrase was. I couldn't find it. So that clearly didn't work. And I finally came to grips and shared with my wife that I needed to move on and to set her free to live her life because I loved her and I didn't want to play that game of using her for any kind of window dressing and yet dealing with my life. I just loved her too much for that, and I had to come to grips with that and leave her. And so after our divorce is when I stumbled up on a small group of people who were in Ebony Showcase in Los Angeles, and there was this preacher who was just on fire for God. By this time, I had graduated from seminary. I had, was working on my master's, and I recall meeting this guy who invited me to this church. And, of course, I had everything on my mind but church, and he says, but with one condition. He says, I'll go out with you if you come to church with me. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I just left the church institution. Don't tell me I've got to go back to this. But I was so attracted to him. I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. I can do this one more time, you know. And so as life would show up, I went to this church called Unity Fellowship. And the preacher came out and began to preach. And he was preaching like the place was jam-packed. He had robe on. He was, you know, ready, and he was, you know, just on fire for God. And everything that he said, every single thing that he said, just began to refresh my soul and water. It was like water to a parched land. I thought, oh, my God, I finally have found someone who believes as I believe. I can remember having long discussions with my instructors and teachers. We could never get on terms or never agree. And here was a man that was saying everything my soul needed to hear. And quite frankly, I couldn't even tell you what happened to the guy who I was supposed to be dating. He just kind of vanished in thin air because I was so taken by the words that the then Reverend Carl Bean was preaching.
Yes.
And I remember being there for some period of time, and I thought to myself, well, I'll just sit in the back and take in what I need to take in. And one day when I was leaving there, he gave me a prophetic word. He looked me straight in the eye, and he said, the Lord has shown me that you are going to play a major role in this movement. And I specifically remembered the word movement because I had never heard that word outside of the civil rights movement or something like that. I'd never heard it in the context of church. And I thought to myself, yeah, right, okay, well, you've missed God, blah, 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 blah. And I went on about my business. And I think the rest is history because I did become very involved, and he and I forged a bond between us that even that, when we look back on it, was very unusual. It was a very intimate bond, although we were not sexual. But we had this, we shared this appetite for the things of God. And I got an opportunity to spend hours and hours with him at dinner and listening and observing the revelation that God was giving him as he was forging and creating work. And I was just totally amazed at the things that I heard. I was totally amazed at the way God was using him. And I began to become sort of like his prayer warrior. And we would share things and talk through the into the middle of the night, just he and I. And it was shortly after that, maybe I spent 10 years working with him as his assistant pastor. And, of course, during that course of time, I was able to do further study as he would recommend things to me and resolve my appreciation for who God made me to be.
Wow. Wow. And look at where the movement is today, what you have together. So now I remember, like I was saying earlier, going to the community center on 13th Street.
Oh, yes.
And that's where you started pastoring, correct?
Exactly, yes. There was a small group of people who had come to Los Angeles on a trip, on a vacation of some kind, and they had come by the church. By this time, we had moved from the Ebony Showcase Theater to a small storefront on Jefferson Boulevard in Los Angeles. And they had come and witnessed the work that we were doing. And once they returned back to Los Angeles, and those people included April Lee and Charles Brack and Dion Freeney. And once they got back to New York, they then called the then Reverend Carl Bean and said, listen, we want to replicate what you're doing in Los Angeles here in New York. And I remember the day that they called because, as usual, I would go to the Archbishop's office after service and kind of encourage him and tell him how powerful his message was. And I remember this particular Sunday, it was just an incredible anointing on him. And I went then to his office, and as I walked in the room, he was almost in tears. And, of course, that concerned me, and I thought, well, maybe he's still kind of high off of his sermon. And he said to me, he said, New York keeps calling me, asking for this work to expand. He said, either I can go and you stay here and pastor the church here. He says, but I've got to do something because the calls keep coming in. Immediately said to him, I will go. You can. You're built to work here. You've got the Minority AIDS Project. You've got all of this. How on earth are you going to go to New York to pastor? I just didn't understand. I said, I will go. And that, at the time, I never even checked with my lover or anything. I just said, I will go. I just spoke it. He said, really, you would go? I said, yes, I will go. You can't leave your work calling, and they keep asking for work, then I will go. Well, I came, and there was 10 people who received me, and we started on May 10th, 1992, with 10 people, and it was shortly after that that it just began to blossom into large numbers. It took off like wildfire, the message, and I simply brought the same message that I had been taught and sitting under the Archbishop for 10 years. And as I begin to share the message of God is love and love is for everyone, and an affirming, positive message that we felt through our interpretation that Jesus Christ offered to everyone, it just blossomed. I mean, it was not shortly after that that we had standing room only. People were lined up trying to get in. You know, the rest is history, and
yeah.
it was something that none of us really planned, and it just did what it did, and it was a very exciting time.
How many states has Unity Churches?
If you would include the works that we started, I would have to say at least 25.
Yeah,
currently, we're down to about 16, but certainly at least 25.
Yeah. It's just an amazing, amazing movement, you know. You have somebody holding on that wants to say hello.
Okay.
5032, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Cash. I'm calling out of Jersey. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hi, Cash.
Bishop, you know I had to call him and say hello. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. Good to hear your voice.
Good, you too. I just wanted to say, you know, thank you as usual for your vision, for answering, you know, the call to say yes and starting, and I guess starting the fellowship in Brooklyn. You know, Unity is my home always, no matter where I live. I come back and support as much as I possibly can, and that's because of the type of person that you are individually and, you know, the spiritual man of God that you are. I just wanted to really, like I said, call in and say hello and thank you for, you know, all that you do and all that you have done for me personally, how you've blessed my life, how you blessed so many others. And I just really wanted to say thank you. You know, I haven't talked to you in a while.
Wow.
Definitely get one of our powwows together. When Javon posted that you were going to be on, I've been sitting here waiting patiently for the chance to say hello. And just like I said, because of what you do, you know, and I have to agree with what Javon said earlier, where your spirit, it just draws, you know, it has drawn me. You're so easy to talk to, and the type of person that you are, you never judge, you never condemn, you always offer good advice, and it's always spiritually based. Without being judgmental, without your personal opinion, it is always God first, and you always put Zachary down to uplift our Heavenly Father. And I can't say it enough that I appreciate you, and I thank you so much, like from my bottom of my heart.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Cash. Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, Javon.
Thank you, Cash. Thank you so, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Archbishop, you're just amazing. I mean, I'm calling you Archbishop. I hope that's prophetic. and no reflection on the Archbishop Carl Bing, who,
right,
you know,
absolutely.
Is also a friend of the show, and I love him so much as well, you know. But, you know, I just hope in my heart of hearts that you gentlemen understand how many lives you've touched.
Mm-hmm.
So many people feeling that same sort of outcast that you described that you were feeling at the time that you were being bullied, and, you know, you had a spiritual base, but you felt uncomfortable in your own church home. And you guys created homes for people who had become homeless, cast out, unsure, you know. It's an amazing thing to have done with your life. Not that your life is over, but, you know, you still have a lot to do.
Well, we often wonder just really, you know, in the souls traveling as they do travel, you know, it's clear to us that we were chosen.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear to us that there was a very unique call on both of our lives. We have had nothing but the highest level of respect and regards for each other's gifts and talents. And we're just grateful to have walked this journey together. We both brought to the table our rich African-American spiritual roots that we give homage to every opportunity that we get. We certainly didn't want to do away with that element that was good for us, and we didn't feel like God wanted us to abandon those roots by any measure. We did have to dig really deep into our souls and our hearts as we searched through the scriptures, as we interpreted the word of God. The Archbishop had certainly started a lot of the work in terms of how God was dealing with him, that he was not called to just start a church for the sake of a church, but was calling a real social justice movement, as we've referred to, in that that, you know, of course, now they're affirming churches almost in every state across the country, yea, even in the world. And we're grateful. We're glad that to have been some of in the first generation of that, particularly in the African-American community. We recognize there's still a lot more work to do, that homophobia, particularly in church settings, is rapid and probably growing more now because of some of the rights that the LGBT community has been afforded. And so we're excited about growth, and we're excited about all that the Lord still has in store for us. We talked earlier this morning, as a matter of fact, just, you know, as God does when we're together, and talking about some new adventures and some new growth that we feel that the Lord is calling this work into.
Yes, yes. And there is a lot more to do. And let's not, you know, let time go by and people not understand how active and how important and productive, you know, I can't even think of exactly the word I'm trying to find, but how much work you guys have done in the AIDS fight, you know?
Yes.
There's been so much good work done by Unity Fellowship Church movement, by you personally and by Archbishop Carl Bean and others. You know, this is important work, important work. There's another caller on the line. I'm going to take this call.
Very good.
Your last four digits are 2867. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Mama Char, Javon. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Where are you calling from?
Well.
Pennsylvania?
Philadelphia.
Philly.
Yes.
Please say hello to the Bishop Zachary. I'm messing up your name.
It's okay.
The Senior Bishop Zachary Glenn Jones. There we go.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm a friend of Jovan's. And I've been listening to it for the last 45 minutes, and I'm glad I did. I have to say it was quite interesting for me. I am a mother that raised a, let me see the phrase for him then, raised a bisexual slash homosexual son and also a lesbian daughter. And, and as a result of that, me being a free will person ahead of her time, so to speak, I was raised in the Bronx in New York, and I was kind of out there. My mother, though, I grew up in a time when children were to be seen and not heard routine. And I was the one that always asked why for everything, got the backhand slaps, you know. So, But as a result, I have friends of all genders and races, creeds, you name it. And I taught my children to, you know, I allowed them to be who they are, and I was able to kind of see who they were as they were growing up, and did not persecute them for it, or did not, you know, give them any reason to feel that there was something wrong with them. I told them that you are who you are, and as you go along your way, you will find out exactly who you are, and one day you'll come into your own and be who you were meant to be. So they were fortunate, I think. They were very fortunate, I think, to have me as their mother. A lot of their friends did not have that type of mom.
Absolutely.
So they kind of melded and gelled at my house a lot. And oh, your mom's so cool and this and that. But in all reality, I enjoyed listening to you and talking about your upbringing and your struggle through the bullying and everything else that you had to go through and that so many kids today go through. And I just wonder, I mean, I am a little older than all of you there, and so I'm just wondering, at what point in life are we ever going to just let people be people and stop, you know, hating on each other as we do? I hope I live to see it. I don't know if I will, but it would be a wondrous thing to do so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I think that a lot of our personalities and our culture is shaped by the church community, by the religious community, and the spiritual community. And I think that it's time, the time has come, that we hold people who have power to influence minds and to direct minds, I think it's time that we hold them accountable. There are a lot of people out there who are feeling unjustly treated, even by those who are supposed to be spiritual leaders.
Exactly.
And they are being silenced.
Mm-hmm.
They are living in fear, and they are living under the impression of being rejected, or knowing that people within their congregation, which is supposed to be their community and a place where they thrive and grow, they know that people are whispering about them and are saying a variety of things that are unchristlike and unwelcoming. And I think that the place, one of the institutions, there are many places we could start, but one of the institutions that tends to drag their feet the most is unfortunately the institution where we're supposed to be able to go and be ourselves, be embraced, and be accepted, and that is the church.
Absolutely. One of the many reasons for the years that I've kept the church at arm's length, because that hypocritical mindset that they have is just, it's unbelievable to me, especially people who claim they're called, and then they tend to speak, you know, out of both sides of their mouths, which I don't agree with. So when and how do you think the church will ever come to grips with what they're supposed to and really just be straightforward and stop being hypocritical?
Yeah, I think that it takes, you know, just like we're working through so many other disagreements in our country and in the world, I think it takes conversation. I think it takes education. I think that homophobia, which is a form of hatred, I think that that is an issue that people tend not to want to talk about, even though it exists. I think it's time that we grow up and have very straight talk about those things. I think that if people feel that they are justified in creating an environment that is unloving and unwelcoming towards the LGBT community of faith, I think that that's where the challenge begins. I think that, you know, people there again are sitting in silence, suffering. And that's clearly not what God wants us to do. That's clear. We are created to be liberated. We are created to enjoy the fruits of God's love and to be able to thrive and to grow. Many doctrines are outdated, and they are doing nothing to consider those people who are suffering. And so, you know, as long as we continue to allow that to happen, it will continue to happen.
Oh, that's a sad situation right there.
It is.
Well, as a mother of children who, you know, were different, so to speak, I speak out and I always have, and I think Javon knows well that I'm not one to bite my tongue.
No, you're
good
not.
Good for you.
And I support children of any, whatever their thing may be. I support them. I don't care what it is. Because somebody has to speak up for them. If sometimes I feel like if I can just reach one, and that one can reach one, and the next one can reach one, maybe we have to do it single file. I don't know. Since we can't seem to do it on a mass basis, if you can just reach one, teach one, and maybe that one can reach one, that starts something right there. So you have to start wherever you can.
Absolutely. I think it's very powerful that you are willing to lift your voice, because there are a lot of parents who the first thing that they do once they find out that their children are gay or lesbian or whatever the title may be, they want to blame it on themselves or take it into or become shameful about it. And I think that, you know, that's where there's an opportunity for the community to support each other through that process, that it isn't anything that the parents could have done more or could have. I know my father, as I stated earlier, you know, he spent extra time. He put me in the Boy Scouts. I was put into this, put into that. And at the end of the day, you know, I still am who I am, although it developed me into, you know, what I consider a pretty decent man, and I never have to give up my manhood. But at the same time, it was nothing that could be manned out of me or anything to that degree. And so I went that route. I suffered as a result of it. Psychologically, I suffered, and I had to find my way back to be able to embrace myself and accept myself. So I thank God for parents like you who are willing to say, listen, I went through this, and I never saw my children as misfits or a mistake of mine, and that you're so open and so willing to talk about it. I think it's powerful, and I would certainly invite other parents that may be listening to recognize that, you know, you have done nothing to make your child this way. This is very much a part of God's plan, and that God's love is available for all.
Absolutely. I appreciate you saying that. And I try to educate as many parents as I can, and sometimes I get, you know, I get the backlash of it as well. But I let them know that I raised the best children in the world, and no, I'm sorry.
That's
can you
okay.
hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. I raised the best kids in the world, and I couldn't have had a better son. As Javon knows, she knew my son.
Absolutely.
I couldn't have had a better child. She doesn't know my daughter as well, but I couldn't have raised a better daughter there either. And I had three children, and my last child, my youngest daughter, who considers her, she said, Mom, you had a gay son and a lesbian daughter, and I'm your only I'm your only normal child. And I looked at her and I said, well, define normal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's how that noise right there. She actually stopped and thought, and then that was the end of that conversation.
But it was an education nonetheless, and that's
it was, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely, and that's where so much of the unwelcoming environment stem from, ignorance. And a lot of times, as you know, as in so many other marginalized communities, when we dehumanize one another, it's so much easier to judge and to degrade or dehumanize. But once we become human and dare to get to know each other, then things happen, because we're wired to be empathetic. We're wired to share and to exchange ideas. And, you know, the LGBT community are very, you know, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of contribution from that community. And if we allow them to allow us to be, you know, wiped out or you know, dehumanized, then the entire community suffers as a result of that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mama Shaw, I
yes,
want to thank
honey,
you so much for calling.
Yeah.
And for listening in. You are beautiful. You know I love you to pieces.
And thanks for letting allow.
Oops. Hello? Wait. I'm sorry. Say that again.
I said, thanks for allowing me to speak my mind, and I truly, truly did enjoy this past hour. Thank
oh,
you so
great.
Much. Have a good night.
You too, dear.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bishop, is there anyone, well, first I'd like to ask you to give us the address to your church.
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely. Yes, we're located in East New York at 2578 Atlantic Avenue. We're at the corner of Atlantic and Georgia. Our telephone number there is 718-385-2406. We have services at 11 a.m. on Sunday and 4 p.m. In the afternoon. And we have just celebrated our first Spanish-speaking worship service
wow.
on Saturdays now at 11. So that's one of our newest projects in reaching out to the Latino community because we know a little bit about their struggle as well around this issue. And so we're really excited about being able to offer that on Saturdays at 11.
That is amazing. What about social networking? Do you have Twitter, Facebook page?
Yes, we do have a Facebook page that is quite active, and we also have our website, Unity Fellowship of Christ Church, New York City, and folks can certainly go there and participate in conversations and dialogue and get the latest of our activity and what we're doing.
Wow, it's amazing. It's amazing the work that you continue to do. I want to
thank you.
There's another caller. You have like 1 minute. I'm sorry because our time is up. Wait.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, where'd you go? I just clicked on him. You were a 718 number and you pressed one and then you disappeared. I guess I scared the person when I said they had 1 minute. Maybe they didn't realize it was them. But yeah, with that we do have to go, but I'm gonna have you back on.
Okay.
And we'll play music. I guess this was our talking and getting it out session. And
yes.
The next time, maybe we'll just play some music and, you know, talk some other stuff. Now they call back. Okay, you got 2 seconds. What's your name and where you calling from?
My name is Kadan Stith, and I am a member of Unity Fellowship Church in East New York.
And what would you like to say to
just
your
like
bishop?
To give a shout out to my bishop, and he is a brilliant man who teaches us life lessons every Sunday.
Wow, thank
Wonderful.
You.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Hi, Bishop.
Thank you, Bishop, for calling in, for always being there for Cheryl and myself and for the community and for the cause and for everything. And God bless you. I love you.
Love you too, Javon. Thank you for the work that you're doing. And any way that we can be supportive, please let us know.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm going to end this show with Kirk Franklin and The Appeal. Cheryl, I know you're listening. Good night, sir.
God bless.
God bless you.
Lord, I stand in your prayer. Wanting you and needing you, I am here and I surrender all of me. So. I can see your will.
and you are the light in the darkness of my night.
I'm lost without you, broken without you. Oh, how I need. What will they say about me? Will the work that I've done be enough to help someone when I die? Will I torment heart to you at the setting of the sun? Wanna hear you say, well done, when I die.
Yeah.
I know he will make me whole. The Spirit and the bride say come.